There are so many industrial complexes. It's not just the military, it's the corporate, it's the religious. And the one that I am most fervently trying to address, and I'm not the only one, but is the pharmaceutical industrial complex, which has a pill for every problem you have and another pill for the side effects. And then a pill for the side effects of that. And they're making a bundle. And if that one doesn't work, they just rename it and send it to. And what's happening is we're masking the pain from our trauma and then getting
we're not addicted, addressing.
And then get addicted to masking the pain of our trauma. And these industrial complexes are working together unconsciously, mostly to keep that ball rolling forward. The only solution is to get a community healthy support and start feeling that pain and discharging it.
True freedom comes from within.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Sovereign States of Mind podcast, where we explore what it means to reclaim authority over our own lives. My name is Jordan Erbs, and I'm excited to have you along for the ride. I believe developing our own independent ways of thinking and being in this life is the first step to exploring the potential experience we can have during our short time on this earth. My intention with this podcast is to have the conversations that help you realize that true freedom comes from within. For your convenience, this podcast is available on all major podcasting platforms, so head over to your favorite app and give us a subscribe and follow there, and you can be notified when there's new episodes. We also appreciate nice reviews if you like what you hear. And sovereignstatesofmind.com offers an option to be notified by email when there is a new episode, or even if you're interested in the content but not quite sure you have the time to invest in listening to an hour-long conversation, we do sum up the episodes pretty in-depth in that weekly email. So that's at sovereignstatesofmind.com. Just pop in your email. We'll only use that email to send you updates from what's going on with this show. This episode is brought to you by Kapi Hawaii. If you're anything like me, you see the value in entheogenic plant allies and nootropics in your everyday life because they help us remain aware of ourselves, focus on our goals, and tune into optimal creative states. This is why I'm super proud to announce the first sponsor. To approach this show is a product line of Kapi Vine microdosing lozenges from Kapi Hawaii. Kapi is a vine that has had a relationship with humans for thousands of years. Hailing from the Amazon, this Kapi vine has been a supportive ally to humans in recognizing the fundamental sovereignty we have over our own consciousness. A few years ago, the Kapi vine played an important role in helping me become aware of my deep psychological tendency towards victimization in the face of hard times and the self-defeating mindsets that developed along with it over years and years. All that changed when I started working with the Kapi vine. I no longer fear taking responsibility and owning myself. These Kapi microdoses remind me every day of the self-growth I carry with me since those early ceremonies. They help me return to a state of basic self-connection. And it's very subtle, but it's very real. When I'm microdosing Kapi, the rough around the edges feels smoothed out. My unproductive cravings are silent, and I find myself acting from an integrated state of mindful awareness. This subtleness becomes profound with time. So whether I'm parenting or playing or working, the Kapi vine helps me better integrate all the growth happening in my life and everything I do. These Kapi lozenges are non-impairing, and you can stay completely functional. It is an MAOI, which means if you're on any medications such as SSRIs, it's very important to speak with your doctor or physician. So if you're on the path of uncovering and creating your best self, Kapi Vine is a powerful plant ally to have along with you. Check out kapihawaii.com. That's Kapi Hawaii. Hawaii is actually pronounced Hawaii by the native culture. Use promo code Jordan at kapihawaii.com for a special 15% off. That's kapihawaii.com. Promo code Jordan, 15% off to get started on your journey with this powerful plant ally. So without further ado, let's get into this episode.
Sovereign States of Mind.
That's why I picked the title for, well, several reasons. One is it's catchy, right? That's why you put it at the top of the podcast, right? It's catchy. Stop doing shit you don't want to do. It's either going to offend somebody or get somebody's attention, or, you know, I've been a therapist for 30 years with all this touchy-feely stuff, and I'm trying to find ways to talk about the healing work that people can actually bite into. So yeah, we're all being run by unconscious material. There's lots of studies on it. We, at the very best, we are 5% conscious of what we're up to. The other 95% is absolutely running the show. If I want to have some influence over my life, I have to have some consciousness about the machine that's running it, right? So that's the short version. It's of course, it's more complicated than just stop doing shit you don't want to do. There's exceptions to it, right? If the biggest one is if the thing I don't want to do is going to get me to complete and manifest my vision. But most of us can't even see the vision because our view is so fogged from all the old stuff. So that's the short answer.
So what is all the old stuff?
So you're a real interviewer, aren't you? You're like...
I get right into it.
You get right into it, baby. That's right. I did about 80 episodes of a podcast called The Recovery Crew. But I think maybe I'm not as good an interviewer, it was just an opportunity for me to talk. So I think a good interviewer just says, all right, tell me about this. So thanks for that.
I go in and out, but I really just have a lot of questions for you. I'm fascinated by your work.
Yeah. So. Well, also, you and I have had enough interaction. I know you're a juicy character with a lot of deep wisdom. So I want this to be a dialogue as much as possible. So the underlying stuff has taken me 30 years to be able to articulate. And it has to do with the best word that I've found to describe it is now popular. I was a trauma expert before trauma was a word that people are like throwing it around, before it was cool. Not that it's cool, but it's now in the vernacular, right?
It's a trend. Yeah, it's a
It's a right, little trendy, right. but people still don't know what it is, or most of the time. And I've, you know, done a lot of personal work and recovery, and also a lot of experiential therapy work on myself, as well as training. And all of the best work points back to the fact that we came into this world pretty clear, right? And then life starts happening. And depending on the level of dysfunction in our early, 0 to 10 years old, 0 to 8, a lot of people say, you know, especially 3 to 7 or 8, whatever those years are, those years when we're like a sponge for everything that happens. And if you don't think kids are a sponge, just listen to them saying curse words. And where did they hear that? Well, they heard it through four walls in an argument that was happening. Kids are a sponge for,
yes.
Yeah, they're a sponge for everything that happens.
And then they go to preschool and tell their teacher what they heard mommy and daddy say.
That's correct. That's correct. So it's a much misunderstood and a much underestimated influence on all of us. And here's what happens. We start talking about trauma. The first response I get from a lot of folks is, oh, I don't have trauma. I'm from a good family.
Mm.
And I go, what does that have to do? I don't care whether you're I'm from a good family that was a shit show, really, once I started digging underneath the surface. And these are really quality, loving people, my family. All trauma is not abuse and shocking explosions. There is so much more that's subtle and in some ways influence our lives deeply. And it takes some education to kind of awaken to it. And no, you don't have to do it, but if you want to grow, you almost have to do it.
What are the different kinds of trauma? Because in two episodes ago in our Channeling Creativity episode, we talked about trauma quite a bit, because once you're healing trauma, you actually find you have a lot more creative flow and a lot more freedom and sovereignty to just be yourself. And it's really enlightening for a lot of people. It was enlightening for me. But I learned in that episode from our guest, who was an actual, I think, a mental health therapist. So trauma is
Right. Right. So there's PTSD and there's CP. There's complex trauma, which is, I think, is probably what you're referring to, which is the kind of trauma that we have subsequent to the original trauma. And then we stack more on top of it. And then we wonder why we're off our authentic path, right? Well, yeah. So we come in the world pretty clean, right? And I like to teach about trauma in terms of the roots, that the roots of trauma, the one that most people know about, and that they think if they don't have that, they don't have trauma. It's abuse. Yeah, a little glitch there, but that happens when I start talking about trauma. Nobody wants to. There's always something keeping me from looking at it. I put a little thing on Instagram today, and I'll repeat it. I'll just do it. It's a what is this obsession with happiness? Can we let go of this wild obsession with happiness? Can we just take a breath and maybe feel what's underneath it? And maybe just allow some grief to come up every once in a while? And maybe on that same river is some joy? Can we consider that?
My theory is that Instagram is the platform for hiding everything, because it's all like aesthetic based. So you could write these beautiful memoirs or reflections on your grief or all your suffering or whatever it is, your healing process. But if it doesn't come with a nice, pretty picture, with good lighting, with a nice camera, then it doesn't make it on the Instagram algorithm.
Yeah.
So it naturally has become this superficial haven.
Yeah. Well, we're going to break that loose, and we're going to trick the algorithm by putting something that looks nice and interesting in the first 3 seconds, and then give them the punchline, baby.
That's the goal.
there's some folks on there, and I hope you and I are willing to not just let the superficiality of social media keep us from teaching, because here's the deal. It's the same thing with the shadow that Dr. Carl Jung talks about. There's a lot of shadow that's dark, right? The darkest part of us. But there's also the flip of it, which is, you know, we can take the same algorithm and bring beauty and healing and wise information to the world if we play it right. If we stay out of the arguments, stay out of the superficial bullshit. But that's probably another episode. So trauma comes in these five roots, at least from my perspective. Abuse. That's the one most people think of when they think of trauma. In other words, sexual abuse, physical abuse, verbal abuse. It's usually pretty violent and very clear what it is. The other one is shocking incidents like explosion, war, the things that cause PTSD. These are the two things that people think of when they think of trauma. And if they don't have that, they're pretty sure they're good. It's the other three that are more subtle, and we all have it in one form or another, and it's running the show. The first one is abandonment. Now, that's not always because we had a family that abandoned us. It has to do with emotional. Kids need a lot of emotional attention, and sometimes families are busy, right? Or there's addiction or mental illness, and there's either physical or emotional abandonment that comes behind it. Sometimes there's extreme dysfunction, and there's a lot of it. And that, which is very closely tied to the fourth one, which is neglect. And it doesn't necessarily mean that there was some nefarious parent neglecting their child. It can come in the form of being from a military family and got dragged to 80 different households, and the kid grows up wondering where he belongs. There was nothing nefarious or there was nothing abusive about that, but it's still trauma that lives in the body. The Ruises from the Four Agreements actually call it domestication. We got domesticated into certain rhythms of life. And then the biggest one, Jordan, that is the most underreported, the most and the most ubiquitous, and that's enmeshment. It's also a word that people go, what? Well, enmeshment is roles in the family that are that have been twisted a little bit. In other words, and if there's addiction in the family, they get twisted a lot. In my book, I wrote extensively about the different roles we take to try to balance the system, right? If there's addiction, then there's going to be an enabler. There's going to be a lost child. There's going to be a hero child. We all take on these different roles to balance the dysfunction in the family. Sometimes we have to grow up too quick. Sometimes we get infantilized, like my mom came to school many times and bailed me out of consequences, right? I never had. Then I grew up, and there's actually. I just want to let you know there are consequences in this world. So there's a lot of different ways that we get domesticated or redirected away from what's authentic for us, and then we find. And there's a trajectory that happens, and by the time we're, I don't know, 30, 40, 50, we have gone so far off that usually there's some train wrecks that wake us up and take us somewhere where we can get some support to do some healing. So that's the short intro on trauma.
So we have some kind of catalytic event that makes us realize, like, oh, wow, there's some deep-rooted shit here that I need to get to the bottom of. And that happens to a lot of people. I feel like it's kind of like common. We talk about midlife crises, the midlife crisis. Now, that's obviously not some train wreck event happening, but just some kind of cycle as our culture goes through or something like that. And I feel like it is kind of, I doubt 100 years ago they were talking about midlife crises, right? I feel like that's pretty new to the last generation or two, where we live in this time of excess, where we can have anything we want, our needs are taken care of, and we kind of just create our own problems because our physical world, for the most part, and not for everyone, but for the most part, our basic needs are met.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, we live in a different cultural time, and the natural things in a traditional culture aren't happening. There's natural healing initiations where the young people are initiated into a life of psychological health. We're closer to, we used to be closer to the earth and to the rhythm of nature, which is, by the way, if you go out 100 miles from the earth and look back, everything there is earth, by the way. Including us, we are made of the same stuff, but we don't think so. We have transcended the earth. We are above it. And even though, you know, any conscious person would say, no, of course, we're an animal, but psychologically, we are not connected. We are disconnected. And yes, there's going to be a crash. I disagree with you. There's going to be a crash and burn of immense proportions if we're way off our path. But sometimes you're right. It's going to be an internal explosion that is like, oh, I'm wasting this life, or I'm with a woman that I, what am I doing here? Or why am I going to this job that I absolutely loathe? Right?
Right.
It's not
what are we doing?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like a bomb that goes off, but it's an internal bomb for many.
Yeah. And just to add to what you're saying, disconnected from each other, we don't have community anymore. In the same way, right. Like, you know, we have this notion of this individuality where I have to go to work every day to pay for my own, you know, to take care of myself, my family, and then that's all. When in reality, our ancestors lived working a few hours in the morning, but everyone's working collectively towards a shared goal. And then everybody eats enough and everybody's in abundance and everybody has time to just enjoy life and spend time with the kids and just be present.
Yeah.
And that's just gone.
Well, that is gone. And to some degree, it's a little bit like my dad used to say, the good old days weren't all that good. It was probably tough times, too. They were just doing what they needed to do. So, but traditional cultures were at least closer to the rhythm of life and community. They were maybe forced into community for survival. We're not forced into it until shit gets really bad, which has been proven by probably Alcoholics Anonymous is the best example of that. For thousands of years, they've tried to beat people and bleed them and kick them, lock them up, whatever it takes to arrest the disease of addiction, right? Until in 1935, they realized that there's a really profound thing, that really advanced clinical mechanism, and that clinical, it's not clinical, I'm kidding, it's one alcoholic to another in a group of alcoholics is the only thing that arrests the disease of alcoholism. And alcoholism is just the same thing that we're all doing, which is trying to self-medicate the trauma. The only solution is community.
So two notes real quick before we move into this, back into this trauma. One, there's a great book to this point of community. It's called A Paradise Built in Hell. And this is kind of more on the macro scale. It's basically an exploration of the extraordinary communities that arose in the face of natural disaster. So the San Francisco earthquake, the Chicago fire, Katrina, New Orleans, an example. And even right now it's happening on Maui. I'm on the Big Island. So we have a lot of community back and forth. And there's a lot of community resilience building right now because, as we know, government institutions are generally inept and they can't get anything done when it's time. And people here experienced that during the lava flow in 2018. But these are like the train wrecks that we all share that suddenly we're like, whoa, we need to work together to get through this. And the second part I wanted to just note about the cycles we're disconnected to in nature is, we go into the ground when we die because we are essentially just going back into carbon. Like, this is what we learn in permaculture systems, where you're planting gardens and trees to work with nature and let the cycles of nature do the work for you. Yeah. And it has a lot to do with composting. And we have chickens and using the chicken poop to turn it into healthy soil to plant trees in. And this is all just a part of what nature is doing anyway. And we're so tapped out of it, expecting some government or corporation or big entity to take care of things for us.
Yeah.
And we're so dependent on that. And there's just a complete lack of responsibility that we experience in this world, whether it's by design or not, I don't know. But it does, I think, lead into, I would argue, a kind of a different kind of trauma along the lines of just being born in this day and age. We always laugh that the first traumatic experience I think anyone has, I think, is when you're coming out of the womb, when you're born.
Yeah.
Everything's perfect. Everything's great inside there. You're in the infinite void of your mother and you don't have to eat. You don't have to breathe. You're just in nirvana, essentially. And then that first breath, you see the light and then suddenly you're in human form. And as the Buddhists say, you begin your suffering.
Yeah. Yeah. It's in my day, they'd slap you.
I think they quit slapping. Yeah. I think they did that to me too. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's not the last slap. The subsequent slaps have to do with this culture to which you're referring, which says things like, you're not quite enough. You're going to need, you need help, or you need this that we can do for you. And then where'd you get an idea like that? And what's the matter with you? And let's shape you up and get you into college. And let's teach you science, technology, engineering, and math, and make you learn how to make widgets for us. We need widgets.
Yeah.
And you'd be a great candidate for widget making, I'm sure. Now, this is an artist that they're talking to, and they say, okay, I'll make widgets. And then, we get on this path that's very carefully constructed. I'm going to sound like a conspiracy theorist now, but there are so many industrial complexes. It's not just the military. It's the corporate. It's the religious. It's the, and the one that I am most fervently trying to address, and I'm not the only one, but is the pharmaceutical industrial complex, which has a pill for every problem you have and another pill for the side effects, and then a pill for the side effects of that. And they're making a bundle, and if that one doesn't work, they just rename it and send it to. And what's happening is we're masking the pain from our trauma and then getting addicted to masking the pain of our trauma. And these industrial complexes are working together, unconsciously mostly, to keep that ball rolling forward. The only solution is to get community healthy support and start feeling that pain and discharging it. I just did a weekend with 40 people doing really deep trauma healing work. We require 30 days of sobriety, or at least abstinence from self-medicating before they get there, and so that we can get our own authentic screen back, so we can see through eyes that come from us as opposed to everything that's been projected onto us and that we're in the rhythm of. And it, you know, it's shocking for a lot of people, right? Right now, there's a lot of people still in a little bit of an altered state because we use combination of psychodrama, bioenergetics, and a lot of visualization techniques that help people get inside and reroute their neural pathways that have been carefully rerouted away from their authenticity.
Wow, powerful. So for someone that's hearing this, and you know, you mentioned earlier, like we might not think we have trauma, but you do. What is something someone can do at home to just start evaluating themselves and checking in, seeing like, okay, where is my trauma? What do I got going on?
Well, it's a good, my first wise ass response is quit being at home, go get support. But you're right. Awareness is where it begins, right? And if your life is not, my dad said, you know, there's a DSM in the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistics Manual that we use in the clinical world for mental disorders. There's 11 criteria for addiction, right? If they're doing this, but actually, what it adds up to is my dad's wisdom, which is if you have if it's causing you problems, you have a problem. I kind of like that diagnostic criteria because it's true. If you're having problems in your life, you might want to start by looking at how you're medicating. And that doesn't necessarily mean pharmaceuticals or alcohol or drugs, although that's kind of the big three that people are using to completely zone out. But there's other ones like excessive work, codependency, love relationships that keep breaking our heart and we're mildly suicidal, or excessively suicidal. Is there such thing as mildly suicidal?
I don't know.
Or
and sex,
gambling, money, food. That's the first place I would look. Where am I self-medicating? The second place is to get some help with it, because if we've gone beyond the point of a habit, it takes support to come off of that. And the first third of my book is about taking a look at how we are abusing ourselves. There's no such thing as drug abuse, by the way. It's self-abuse. The drug doesn't feel anything. That's where I would start. But in my book, I'm not trying to sell my book, except I want to share this information. And by the way, it's free right now, or 99 cents on Amazon for the next few weeks. I don't know when this is going to air, but at the end of each chapter, there's questions that you can ask for yourself and do some journaling and bring some awareness about that.
Great.
But that's where it starts. Cool. Where am I self-medicating? And then, of course, the model that I use is recover, heal, launch. It's in three sections. Recover is get our chemistry back. Heal is do the deep trauma work, which that's a whole nother conversation that I'm happy to talk about if you want. And then the real goal for us all is to launch into our authentic life. This is precious, man. I'm older than you. There's like, I'm going to live this thing, man. It's time to, like, am I going to get another one? I don't know. I better come to a guy like Jordan to find that out. That's beyond my pay grade. But I think this might be the only one I get. Now, I'd like to be in it.
Yeah, well, there, you know, the cliches come for a reason, and you know, we used to say YOLO. I think that is one of the greatest things to come from this millennial generation is the YOLO lifestyle. And it sounds silly and it's cliche, but it's just overwhelmingly true. And the more you learn to just live presently and to be here in the moment and not being distracted by the trauma and the shit you don't want to do, then the more you realize how precious this life is. And there's, you know, what do they say? The best time to plant a tree was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now. And it applies in this scenario as well. Do you have any kind of relationship with plant medicines?
I have a relationship with any substance I could get my hands on to try to adjust my chemistry up until the age of 35, at which point I was suicidal after I lost my marriage and a couple of jobs and was living a life that I didn't want to live. And then, so I started 12-step recovery back then. And since then, I've been just on a path of trying to access more and more of my own chemistry and to get, you know, it's talk about cliches to get high on my own supply.
And, yeah.
As opposed to, you know, trying to get anything from the outside to adjust me. Now, I know that it's this week's, here's my wise ass, it's this week's solution, along with about 10 other things that have come on in the last, I'm kidding, by this week, but it's the current thing. You know, I've been doing this for a long time. Okay, the psychedelics are the hot thing right now. I was going to disparage some other techniques, but I won't do it. But for me, it's not going to be happening for me. I'm going to get high on what I got here, right? And I do a lot of really intense transformational processes, including things like holotropic breath work, which is a natural way to get high if you want to get high, or if you want to transcend and make contact with the other side. There, you know, psychodrama and bioenergetics and deep trauma work. When you come out of that, there is a contact with the universe that can't be described or replicated by any kind of synthetic or counterfeit version. So for me, it's just not on my list. It's not on my list of recommendations for the folks I work with, because I want to work with people and their chemistry, as opposed to people who and whether what's happening with them is happening due to some other mixture of chemistries. Just kind of blurs the healing process for me.
So when I mention plant medicines, I guess I'm referring to when it's used in kind of a ceremonial purpose with intention, such as trauma healing. And in particular, I think I'm referencing ayahuasca, which I'm sure you've heard of, and I'm sure you've heard anecdotes about it. For me, ayahuasca was the big turning point in my life, because it didn't help me. It didn't do anything for me. It allowed me to see. It opened the door for me to see and do the work myself. And I feel like that's the part of the conversation that's often missing when we talk about psychedelics and all that, is that the plants aren't doing anything. You're doing the work. The plants just help you see what work needs to be done. And so I stand by that, simply ayahuasca, but even just cannabis. I feel like they can be great teachers, but they're not the healers. You're the healer. You have to do the work. And whatever it is in this life, if you're not doing the work, you're not going to get anywhere. It's not going to happen. You're not going to see results.
Yeah, we don't get high on any of the drugs that we ingest. All it's doing is stimulating the chemistry that we already have in our body, right? And that's what's happening. We have the ability to access those other levels of consciousness within us if we want to. I don't care if that gets somebody going and on this process. I don't know, take them out in the woods, and I do a lot of ceremony. I studied with two different Native American medicine people for over 12 years. And so I'm quite familiar with all the options and all the ways to get high without getting high. And also, you know, for some people, they're not going to get into this work without some help. I don't even care if it's an AI therapist. If it starts, somebody on the path of looking within, I'm for it. It's just, you know, in my school, which is a pretty big community of folks now, really try to keep their system. I really encourage people keeping their system clean. I don't know how else to say that.
Oh, sure. And it's the surefire way to getting to the bottom of it, the bottom of yourself, to the heart of the matter, without distractions. And, you know, when we have a lot of distractions, sometimes just making them less can be effective. And until you get to that point, like right now, I'm in a point where I'm not even on caffeine. It's like I'm just sober again. I finally got to that, you know, into that alignment. And I've experienced it before in my life, but I go in and out. I find it phasal. And when I'm out, I do find the other tools to help me kind of come to nudge myself back into that state until I can, okay, cool. I'm focused. I can get up early. I can go do my workouts. I can meditate. I can do all the things I need to do. And I don't need any support or help. And, yeah. And that's me. You mentioned holotropic breath work. That I encountered about 10 years ago, and it was a very big part of my life for a while. However, in the first years, it was completely unguided. And I felt like I kind of tapped into some things that I was not ready for. And yeah. In some cases, it opened up some doors in my life that ended up causing more trauma than healing trauma.
Well, yeah, it's that's a big topic, right? It's that for me, the response to that for me is I have to have a lot of support. If you're going to dive into getting sober, do it with a lot of support with people who are working a good 12-step program. Otherwise, don't do it. I recommend you keep using the medications that you're using that are working. Until then, get into a group. And, you know, my literature, my websites have lots of suggestions about where to do that. That's one. Two, if you're going to dive into the trauma, and holotropic breath work is a choice to dive into the trauma. However, you got to do more than just lay on your back, listen to loud music, cough up those hairballs and stir them up, and then do some art at the end of the workshop, which is a holotropic breath work sequence. Very powerful to stir that stuff. But you got to do that doesn't integrate the story of how we got wounded. That's why it takes the most effective recommendation I have is a combination of psychodrama and bioenergetics. J.L. Moreno's psychodrama gets to the story in combination with Alexander Lowen's bioenergetics. That's what we use at the Deep Waters Experience workshops. They also use that set of techniques at a place called the Bridge to Recovery. These are very powerful ways to go down in and come back up and get yourself back into your body and bring your story, your wounded story, back into your life. It's like EMDR is a technique that you know about EMDR. Have you heard about that? It stands for eye movement desensitization. I can never remember what the last one is, but it is the most effective intervention for PTSD. Because what happens is when we are shocked into some kind of trauma, our short-term memory, our body is genius. Our short-term memory is ready to react to that same thing. Even if there aren't any bombs that could possibly go off, we're waiting for it, right? And what EMDR does is help that trauma sink into our longer-term memory. It's very effective. However, it doesn't help us to necessarily integrate the trauma, the story, into our life. It just kind of gets it out of the way. With holotropic breath work, it stirs it up, but it doesn't necessarily help you bring that story into your life and integrate it. Whereas the combination of 12-step recovery and these deeper role-playing visualization kind of processes can bring the authentic story that happened to us more vividly into our life, discharge the trauma from it, and just make ourselves more of a person of depth. Yeah, some shit happened to him. Look at him. Wow, there's a vibrancy. People that have a lot of trauma, that haven't looked at it, are often what we would refer to as dissociated. You can't even really, they've learned how to keep it down and not have it up on the surface of their personality. And the real work is to get the flow happening again, right? So that we're in our lives emotionally. And it takes support and usually group support. A lot of people want to run off and do it on their own. It's not recommended that you do a bunch of stirring up of our shit and then isolate. No, you're going to, that's not good.
I really like that way of looking at it as integrating this, integrating it into your story, because we're such, we're creatures that have storytelling so deep within us. That's how we have shared information for so long.
That's
how we.
That's so true. So true. Michael Mead. You know about Michael Mead? Yeah, man.
I don't know.
Check out some of his, he tells stories while he's drumming and, sort of inducts you into the myth. He's one of the mythopoetic genius guys. It's great.
So you mentioned bioenergetics to help bring that trauma out once you've shaken it up and more to help integrate it. Do you mean by that like exercises, like almost like Tai Chi, or what are some examples of bioenergetics?
Bioenergetics is a very specific set of tools. Alexander Lowen developed it, and it's called bioenergetic analysis. In other words, everything that's happened to us is in our body in a tense position somewhere, and bioenergetics releases it. That's the very short version. I'm sure an actual certified bioenergetic analyst would roll their eyes at my description, but it's very powerful work. There's many other offshoots of it. Core energetics, the radical aliveness people. that's some wild shit right there, but it's very powerful. Their first rule at their workshops is everything is welcome here. And believe powerful. Me, it's a wild letting loose of whatever is trapped in the body. And
like catharsis type stuff.
That's right. The Greeks came up with that. They brought the Dionysian rituals down from the mountains onto the stage, so that the people could have a little bit of emotional release.
Yeah, that's how I originally got into holotropic breathwork, was from the Osho meditations, you know, Bhagwan, the guy from that Netflix documentary, Wild Wild Country. And they had that cult over in Oregon. Right. But there was a lot of profound stuff going on there, even though it got all messed up, like cults tend to do.
That's right.
And what I had learned, you know, what, 25 years after that happened, but they had these recordings and they have these sessions, and it's essentially that you breathe, then you dance, you get cathartic, and then you have a meditation to integrate it. You do some drawing. And yeah, I mean, it's a powerful exercise. And I would say to anyone listening, definitely do it with a group and with someone that is leading you in the beginning, especially the beginning, because it's energy you don't want to. It's energy you want to stir up, and you want to be able to release it and integrate it the right way. Otherwise, you're just shaking the pot, and in my experience, you're going to make more trauma with what happens after that. It stirs a lot of the ego. I'll put it that way. I think that's the simplest way I can put it, and that kind of starts to manifest in your life in other ways. What was the other? So you have a whole repertoire of tools here that you bring in when people come to your. What are these retreats? Or are they the afternoon work at weekends? What are these sessions?
Well, I'm a psychologist in private practice, so I see 2 days a week. I just see people back to back, and for the most part, I've quit. I've quit trying to actually do much healing in that space. Mostly I'm a referral source. I refer people to themselves, refer them to group therapy or 12-step recovery, which is the, you know, Scott Peck said 12-step recovery was the most important movement of the 20th century that started in the 20th century. There is support for every corner of our lives, not just addiction. It's Dr. Carl Jung's psychology in a popular expressed form. And I don't think many people think you got to be an alcoholic or an addict or some real wacko to go access 12-step recovery. But my friends, it's the healthiest bunch of people on the planet. So that's the first thing. I'm trying to refer. And one of the things I also refer to is places where they can do the deep work and have it integrated in a sense of community. Not unlike what you were referring to earlier in a traditional culture. There's a certain initiatory energy to the weekends that we do that are traditional and ancient in certain ways, but also we create a lot of safety and connection based on some of the best clinical information on trauma, which and I say it the best because most of the clinical world doesn't understand trauma or addiction in any way. So sometimes I say, yep, I'm a therapist, but don't hold that against me. I do know how to do healing.
All right.
And I do know how to help people let go of addiction. I do know about that. Most of my licensed colleagues have no clue. Don't get me started.
Okay.
I guess it's too late. I don't know what you asked me, but the weekends. Yes, we do a weekend called the Deep Waters Experience. And it's deepwatersrecovery.org. We're a nonprofit. Anybody that wants to come can come. It's a by donation model. And it's a 3-day intensive with groups afterwards and that are on Zoom because people come from all over the world to these workshops. And it's in the tradition, I would say, of gestalt therapy and psychodrama and bioenergetics and the encounter movement of the 70s. There's a big organization called the Mankind Project and a women's organization that's associated called the Women Within, which are really trying to bring traditional healing values in some of what we do at Deep Waters, which is for men and women, are related to all of those organizations.
Just the container, the space of people coming together to support one another in these processes is so powerful, and I don't think it can be understated. Just every Sunday we have a big drum circle party at a park nearby, and it's overlooking the ocean, and it's just people from all walks of life, all ages, just come in. There's hundreds of people and everyone's just partying and enjoying themselves however they choose to do it. And there's a big drum circle. Everyone's drumming along to their own rhythm. And then there's people dancing inside and everyone just feels free to dance, to be weird, to do whatever that is. And that's not even with an intention. Like everyone's just showing up to enjoy themselves. And so when you have an actual container created for these spaces, I remember I used to have friends that were, they had healed from the 12-step process, like you mentioned, and they were such big advocates for it. Anytime they were traveling or something and they felt like they needed some community, they would just go to a 12-step meeting because they would just feel like this is a place where I feel safe. This is a place where I know that I can connect with others. Yep. Like you said earlier, the alcoholics to alcoholics. That's how they can jive.
Well, it's not a mistake that maybe the very best community, 12-step community I've ever run into is in Hawaii. It's for a couple of reasons. Yeah? One is it's, people that have decided they're going to live a good life wind up in great places. I'm in Austin. That's another one of the places where there's an incredible recovering community. But it's also a party town, and so is Hawaii. so that's the other reason, when it goes off the rails, when it gets to the place where it's not, when partying becomes death-defying, fortunately, there's a solution. And that's why I would never tell anybody to stop drinking or to stop using or to stop having serial relationships. Do it more until you get the pain enough to go get some spiritual help.
Plus, when you have a resistance to something or to stopping something, it just creates more when you try to force yourself to do something.
That's doesn't work. That's 12-step recovery in a nutshell, Jordan. Well said. People walk in there and they think people don't go to the program because they think people are going to tell them that they have to stop. And you don't have to stop to go to AA. You'll be welcomed, but it's hard to sit around there for very long without making a change.
And then in these anonymous environments as well, like where else can you just admit that you have a problem? Because you know it. I know it. Like we're the only ones that can know it. And like, okay, I'm too scared to tell my wife that I'm addicted to porn, for example.
Yeah.
I'm too scared to admit to my family that I'm an alcoholic and I lost all their money or whatever it might be. But you go to a place where you're anonymous and then you can process through that and you can feel loved in the process. And that can't be understated.
Very powerful, very important part of it, right? Especially in the beginning. Now I don't give a shit. I've been going for so long. What do you want to know? The last podcast I was on, she kept asking me about my jail time. Jesus, oh, yeah. All right, I'll tell you about it, but do we have to spend the whole podcast on it?
Well, you can't just bring that up and then not tell me about it.
There wasn't that much. It was actually one possession charge, a couple of nights in jail because I'm not paying warrants, and one public intoxication. So there was no long jail time, but yep, I have a little story about being on cold, wet concrete. My addiction took me there.
Yeah, sure. And that's powerful. And then the vulnerability, the strength required to actually be vulnerable about it and share and be authentic and open. Oh, yeah. That's
once you feel that concrete, it's like, I'll do anything. What do you want me to do? I promise I'll never do it again. Well, it takes a few times for some of us.
Yeah. Well, and that's what makes you such a leader today. Is because, you know, you're not hiding from that past of yours and that story. It's like, yeah, this is how I got here. This is what makes me me.
Yeah. No, you know, I was, you know what I was doing out there, Jordan? I was trying to find God. That's the other thing about 12-step recovery. You know, when you're in there sober, you're in there with people who are getting high to try to feel that thing. It's a lot. It's not unlike that spiritual, you know. It's not unlike that. So what you're sitting in a circle of seekers, right? Only now we're having, before it was counterfeit spirituality that doesn't work because, you know, you wake up the next morning and I don't even remember my encounters with whatever I was doing, right?
With whatever you were doing.
That's right. So that's in the work. In all of the work, the healing work, it really becomes a spiritual experience. And I don't mean religious in any way. What I'm talking about is we get connected to each other and the world. We start realizing that we're part of this thing and not separate like we do. When the most advanced version of feeling like we're separate from the world is when we're self-medicating. We completely distance ourselves from our own authenticity and our connection to other people's authenticity.
I was an alcoholic for a long time and it affected everything I did. I didn't know it, right? But it was controlling everything I was doing, controlled my goals, controlled where I would go and what I would do next. And I would always just kind of be in denial about it. And, you know, I lived pretty low key under the radar. I traveled, I lived minimally. I didn't really, you know, I wasn't affecting people with it, but I just partied and I just enjoyed it. And then the partying, you know, at times would turn into, oh, well, I'm lonely. I'm alone tonight. I'm going to have a bottle of wine. And then the next day would turn into depression. Oh, I'm alone. And then you just realize these like self-fulfilling looping cycles. I'm like, what am I doing? This isn't. And it took me a long time to finally admit it to myself. I never went to any kind of AA or 12-step program. I had too much pride. And I learned about them after the fact, but because for me, something was always about like, I got to do things my way and the hard way. Like I got to do it my way. And I knew like, if you're a man, Jordan, you got to figure this out. You got to stop and you got to come to terms with who you really are, what you've been doing, not just with the time you've been wasting, but the relationships you've been, not honoring. And yeah, it was a process, but I did it. I got through it. And nowadays I have a very nice relationship with alcohol. I'm off of it again, but I can be balanced about it and I can have a beer and I can feel later like, okay, that was a fun hour. But now I have a headache or now I have a stomach ache and okay, that's it.
So sometimes that old masculine message that we got of be tough, pull up your bootstraps, do it yourself kind of works for some people. It just never worked for me. Surrender is what I've had to learn how to do in order to get my life back. Over and over and over and over every day. And it takes, you know, a lot of support. I was probably about your age when I finally quit trying to do it myself. But I had much more of a shit show happening than you do, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, maybe.
So I'm grateful.
You're grateful.
We all get a wake-up call of some kind or another, and we all have different ways of doing it. I don't know. I think, and we can do this on another podcast. We'll have a nice argument about it. But I think surrender is easier. It's an easier
when you
path.
Have
easier
when
path
you have those resources.
Myself, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, for me, it was no longer about forcing myself. I was like, okay, no, I'm done with alcohol, and it slowly just became of like I'm no longer attracted to it. I no longer want it, and I would try. Like I was in Ireland. And I was like, I can't like not go have a Guinness, you know, it's the best, you know, beer in the world, like in Ireland. And then I would, and it would turn into like three or four. And then the next day I would be like, what am I doing? Like I was trying to write a book at the time. And I'm like, this is just affecting everything that's important to me. And yeah, so I would find myself kind of like, you know, dipping my toes back in like, oh, I remember why I like this. And then something kind of, you know, would jolt me out of it and realize, eh.
Yeah, well, so we all have different processes, and you know, you may or may not have that thing. I don't know. You might not be an addict. For me, if it's one thing, once I put one of them down, it's like the whack-a-mole. I'm looking for another way to medicate myself. So I just go to a bunch of meetings and love the support, and it's not for everybody.
Yeah. And I love that lesson of surrender. I mean, once you have the intention, you can surrender to it. I do firmly believe that you have an intention in this life to make some growth or to whatever it is. You set your intention to make it happen and you put in the work and you allow it, but you surrender to it. You don't try to control it, but you do have to do the work. It can't be done for you. I can't stress that enough.
Yeah, that's right. The best joke in 12-step rooms is, you know, AA didn't work for me. And then you have to let that sit there for a minute, because a lot of people say that and say, well, you know, it doesn't work for anybody. You have to do the work. AA doesn't do anything.
So stop doing shit you don't want to do. Who would you recommend to pick this up? Anyone?
You know, my marketing guy, we keep talking about that. Who's your audience, Bob? I don't know, man. Everybody. He says, you can't say that. You got to... We got to figure out who this is for. I would say probably my first response would be somebody who's like really looking at their life and have tried some things and it just ain't working. They've tried to change it. It's not working. I have some good suggestions how to get some traction, but they're not, they're pretty simple, but they're not easy.
I think you nailed it on the head earlier when you said like it's, you know, it's going to pop off the shelves. You know, you see that, stop doing shit you don't want to do. And if that resonates with you, you're going to pick up that book because you're like, wow, I'm doing shit I don't want to do all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was, you know, originally just going to leave the title like that and then some kind of a superficial subtitle. But then I said, yeah, I'm not going to try to trick people into thinking it's something it's not. So the subtitle is A Straightforward Guide to Letting Go of Unresolved Trauma. So I'm at least owning what you're getting into if you get into the book. But it's also, I'm not suggesting that the book itself is a solution at all. It's another referral to community, of which there is a lot of support in the world. Once we start looking around and let go a little bit and surrender a little bit, and then what happens is you start running into people like I ran into you. You're going to run into other seekers and get out of this isolated world of trying to figure it out with this inept machine up here that knows almost nothing, but we think it knows everything. And we start letting go a little bit at a time, listening to the wisdom of others, taking a little bit of direction. Now, guys like Jordan and Bob are not very good at that. We're pretty smart and creative, and we want to figure that shit out ourselves. But, you know, we didn't get to where we are, pal, without, okay, I'm going to listen a little bit and allow myself to be part of this bigger thing. And, yeah.
And without getting too deep into the weeds, yeah, like other people are, in my opinion, like, if we want to learn about ourselves and learn anything in this life, it comes from the people around us. It comes from anyone. It comes from conversations. It comes with connecting. And you know when it's real because you can feel it. It gets you excited.
Yeah. That's right. That's the beauty of a lot of the work that I do. You know, it looks on the surface like, you know, I'm doing a lot of healing work for a lot of people. Actually, you know what I'm doing? Exactly what I want to do. And I do work at these weekends as the leader of the weekend. I step to the center of the circle and cough up a bunch of old hairballs. And, you know, some people look, well, how can the leader be crying in the middle of the circle? This is how this community works.
That's beautiful.
I didn't get into this work to step back and be the all-knowing person that has it all figured out. No. And that's the other thing about 12-step recovery. The thing that works is the expression of personal experience. And then I say, oh yeah, me too. Oh yeah. It's an amazing dynamic when we get out of isolation and start to let go of those old messages. I'm telling you, I have a whole process at these weekends where people have to start uttering the words, I need help. I need help. Some people, it's like they haven't ever said it in their entire life.
Wow.
I'm not kidding.
I bet you could write a book.
Especially men. It's like you have to practice saying, I need help. I need
humbling ourselves. It's crazy difficult.
Never to help. We were told to figure it out, fix it, and be strong. Don't ask for help. That was my marching orders as a man.
Go to the doctor. Have the professional do it for you. But you pay him. Yeah, yeah. It's not about asking for help. It's just about saying, "Oh yeah, fix it."
Yeah, fix
Here's
it.
Here's my money. Right.
Especially if you have a kid. If you have a kid that's something not going right, you take him to the doctor and you say, "Doctor, fix this." And you know, hopefully a doctor occasionally will say, "Well, wait a minute, the kid's problem. Let's look at you first, because it might have to do with what the."
Yeah, well,
I can't tell you how many people bring their kid to me and to fix them. And
oh, really?
Yeah, and it doesn't last very long usually, because it's like, yeah, the kids are. Let's take a look at you and your recovery and what's going on and what he's reacting to. What this 12-year-old is acting out? What's he acting out? He's acting out the unresolved issues in the house.
It's become super clear for us. We just have a 3-year-old and a 2-year-old, a year and a half-year-old. And when my wife and I are not showing each other love, and we're not close, and we're not supporting each other, if there's just a bad day or whatever, it totally comes out in my 3-year-old's behavior. He'll be a little punk, and he'll be fighting his sister. And then when we find that we focus on just being in a loving relationship and being good partners, then the whole house becomes harmonious.
Yep, it's so
really
good.
Crazy.
It's so good that a young dude like you can see that. That awareness is reducing the amount of the therapy bills for your kids in the future.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, well, we put a lot, we invest a lot into making sure we do the best job we can parenting. On Monday, I have my kids' preschool nursery teacher coming in, because she's like a Waldorf, just amazing woman who's just all about empowering kids as they're growing. And how difficult it is for us as parents to just allow our kids to just be and to accept them, because that's all they want, is to just be accepted. And then our job is to just nurture and kind of guide them. Not but what I was raised as is, don't do that, don't do that, you know. Yep. Like, hey. And that's what I naturally want to do, because that's what I was coded.
Exactly right. That is such good insight, brother. That's I get really excited when I hear people that are conscious like that, because it's rare. And the best thing I can do for my kid is to do my own inner work. There's nothing. There's no advice. Quit. Let's stop advising, raising, encouraging, pushing, shoving, whatever these things are that we do with our kids. Can we just back off and let them emerge as they are? It's a very Waldorfian way of thinking. And it's but the thing, Waldorf doesn't put a whole lot of emphasis on doing trauma healing work. But if that what happens naturally when we do our own inner work is we stop with all this pushing of our kids.
And, interesting.
And yes, interesting. It happens naturally. We don't have to make ourselves not say, "You little punk." You know, we stop doing it because somebody called you a little punk somewhere. That went in your body. And that, and believe me, I got 1,000 of those from my childhood. Are you kidding?
And just the impatience that can develop, I find doing the work on myself keeps me patient and like with myself. And then that, you know, that reflects outwards, especially to my kids who can really, really trigger and push the buttons, as we all know.
The other, you asked me a question, what can people do? The other thing is inner child work. That's an extremely powerful internal psychodrama that we can do, which makes people, it's kind of touchy-feely, and people make fun of it on Saturday Night Live, probably. I don't know. But it is extremely powerful to do. There's a book, I think it might be The Drama of the Gifted Child, or any kind of work that has to do with bringing the inner that child of ours forward. There's a program called Adult Children of Alcoholics and Dysfunctional Families that invite healing. That's a free program. It's a 12-step program, but it's not a substance use program. It's a healing trauma program that I strongly recommend. All those things are in the book.
Do you also have a website with all of these resources?
Yes.
Or is the book the place to go? Okay.
I have three websites, but it's very, I don't want to complicate it too much, but the main website to go to is bobbear.com, B-E-A-R-E, or drbobbear.com. They'll both work. So let's just keep it simple. There's also deepwatersrecovery.org for the workshop, but bobbear.com is a place to go get the free book or get redirected to get the 99-cent digital copy on Amazon. We're keeping the price, you know, free, really. It's just... whatever the lowest Amazon will allow us to do. So, because I want to get the information out there more than anything else.
Well, that's amazing. I really appreciate the work you're doing. I think the world appreciates it, even if it doesn't know it yet. So thanks, Dr. Bob. And thanks for coming on to talk with me.
Thanks, Jordan. It's been a pleasure, man. And let's stay connected.
Thank you very much for listening. This podcast is available on all major apps. Please head over and follow there. And if you really like it, leaving a quick review and 5 stars is super helpful, especially on Apple Podcasts. SovereignStatesOfMind.com is a place you can put in your email to receive things to your inbox every week. These are updates. These are blog posts, anything related to this podcast and the theme of developing sovereign states of mind, sovereignstatesofmind.com. You can also support the show there by becoming a monthly patron. My name is Jordan Erbs. You can find me on Twitter as Jordan Erbs, JordanUrbs. And I look forward to interacting with you and hearing a bit about your journey. If you're interested in coming on this podcast, don't hesitate to be in touch. Much love. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Sovereign States of Mind.